Welcome to the Adam Savage Project. I'm Adam.
I'm Norm.
And Mary. And I'm Mary.
Mary Roach.
Dot, my goodness.
My friend, it's been, I think it's been almost a year. Did I interview you over at the Exploratorium about a year ago? Was that when we were there? Or was that like 2 years ago?
Yeah, that was, I think it was over a year ago because it was pre-COVID.
Yeah.
Exploratorium. Yep.
They wanted us to talk about, I had my suits. They wanted us to talk about space. And I think we spent a whole hour talking about space poop.
I did that. Yeah. That's my fault. I think because I got all excited, I tried to be a maker and I made a replica. I did my Adam Savage thing. I made a replica of a fecal bag, an Apollo era fecal bag, but it was not nearly as high fidelity as had you made an Apollo era fecal bag.
But I was just thinking about the other day, because I was actually going through my space folder of inspiration, and I have a folder labeled things I might build one day. And I found the spatula. I have pictures of the spatula that they use on the shuttle. And it's a normal kitchen spatula that's been attached to a piece of folding aluminum. And it's really easy to build. I'm going to build it as a one-day build.
Okay, wait.
They need the reach. They need the length.
Yeah, yeah.
So this is a spatula for the toilet?
I believe this is a spatula for the toilet.
For the shuttle toilet?
Uh-huh.
Oh, wow. Because the shuttle toilet... No, I don't mean to... see, here I go again. We could now proceed on a solid half hour of the shuttle space toilet. Anyway... Yeah, the spatula. Because there was. I thought you were talking about the SpatSat, which was a spatula that one of the astronauts was on an EVA outside the shuttle, and he dropped the spatula, which I think he was like bondoing some hole in the side, and he dropped it, and so it, you know, it's now it's probably not orbiting anymore, but it was for a while. A SpatSat, a spatula satellite.
I was just reading yesterday about the probable condition of Elon Musk's Tesla as it approaches Mars right now, and that solar radiation has rendered probably all the paints gone and the leather work is rotting because the radiation's breaking all the carbon chains of everything natural.
Oh, wow.
A few years, it'll just be an aluminum frame.
I would love to see that. I would love to see like when he first let it go. I guess there are images of that, although... Kind of
they're live streaming. There's like a dash cam, right?
Yeah,
looking at the mannequin in the suit.
Right, yeah. But it wasn't exactly the perspective. I wanted the, you know, it comes, you know, I wanted it from off to the side so you could see it actually taking off. But now on the way to Mars.
But yeah. Mary, you, like all of us, have survived the last 9 months or so in lockdown. And I'm curious how you've been coping, how it's all been going for you.
You know, for me, the timing was, I don't mean to say anything positive about COVID, but the timing was okay because I wasn't researching, I wasn't traveling, researching, I wasn't in that phase because that would have completely derailed me. For a year, I would have been just hamstrung. So I was at the end of a project. I was finishing writing. I was going over edits. I was doing all that crap. Finished that and then had a couple. I did a adaptation of a Packing for Mars for middle grades. So that.
Oh, neat.
That could all be done at home. It's basically just take 80,000 words, turn it into 20,000 words and rewrite every single one of those 20,000 words. You know, I was like, hey, no problem. We'll just jettison some chapters, throw it together. Well, no, more work than you'd think, but fun. So, you know, I'm doing an update Stiff. It's been 20 years since Stiff came out.
Wow.
So, I know, right? I'm old. Wow.
You must count a whole bunch of forensic pathologists that you must be responsible for thousands of forensic pathologists.
Yeah, I've launched many careers. Every now and then someone at a reading will go, oh man, you know, I'm now studying to be a forensic pathologist or whatever, you know, something from Stiff and you're the reason. And I'm all like, yay, sorry.
Whoever sorry, it is that cuts a... those heads off.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, a little update, epilogue, sort of bringing stuff up to date for Stiff. So I had things to do to keep myself busy because I don't have hobbies. I don't have a, you know, like, you know, I'm not like you. I don't have a cave and a, like, Ed's got a studio in the backyard, the basement, he's got a workshop. He's just, my husband Ed can occupy himself easily. He likes to cook, whereas I'm a one burner gal. I don't have four burners ever going. So it's good that I had something to do.
Given the oscillation of projects, lots of research and travel, then the hunkering down to write, does this mean that there's a new book coming out?
It does.
Can we talk about it at all?
I asked my publicist. She's like, please, please hold off till February.
Okay.
She doesn't want me to, and this kills me because Adam, there is a footnote. It is the longest footnote. It is 3/4 of a page. It's well beyond the allowable boundaries of a footnote. It is sort of a whole chapter unto itself. And it is for you, inspired by you, and entirely addressed to you. And I bet you can guess what it's about. But anyway,
I can't wait.
It was sort of an assignment that you gave me years ago.
Oh, uh-huh. I was just reading the longest footnote I've ever read last night.
How long was it?
Well, it's almost book length. I was reading Ada Lovelace's notes on the analytical engine.
Of course.
And I've been researching her for a thing I'm working on. And she's more amazing the deeper you get into her mind. Because she translated this French article about the analytical engine, and she'd been working with Babbage for years already. But in this translation, she included translator's notes, which are twice as long as the actual article she translated. And they're the first notes of, and this is, it's basically all a footnote that presages the entire computer age, because she points out the difference between affecting numbers and affecting operations upon numbers.
Wow.
And in that difference, she's like, wow, we may be able to actually compute things that aren't mathematical at all because we can symbolize everything. And you're
amazing.
Like, she saw this 140 years ago. It's
amazing.
60 years ago. Yeah.
Very cool.
Anyway, I love long footnotes and I can't wait. Oh my gosh. Well, we'll have you back on the podcast when there's an actual book tour to talk about. We'd love to hear about it.
Cool. That sounds good.
I find that my wife Julie and I take any excuse to get out of the house together. So, like, even a small errand, we drove to A&W Burgers in Marin a couple of days ago just for the hot dog.
Yeah. No, I believe it. Yesterday, because we redid our fireplace, we realized something was wrong. The facade was separating from the wall, and for the past 10 years, we've thought, well, it's happening slowly. We'll just let it, we're going to monitor that. Well, we finally took it down and the fireplace, somebody essentially just shoved some remnants of bricks in there and like stuck them together with, I don't know, mayonnaise and then slapped something. It was completely falling apart. Anyway, we're finally done with that process, but we needed to get a mantle. And so we were looking at a piece, we're going to get a slab of wood for the mantle. So Ed, someone said, hey, there's this place in San Leandro that's got a bunch of different woods that are pretty cool. And I'm like, I'm coming with you. So we're like, so excited. We're driving to San Leandro to look at wood. It was very, so yeah. Any excuse to get out.
I'm curious in the last 9 months, I mean, there's been such a battleground about science and truth. But specifically since so much of what's been talked about in the last 8 months has been about the body and things that are within your realm, I'm curious if your body of knowledge from writing your books gave you a different perspective on what's been going on.
Well, it took me back to, I think it was the first feature story I ever reported, first major feature story, or they sent me to, it was a magazine piece, and they sent me to the Common Cold Unit in the UK, which is this place where British people would sign up as a holiday to go, and it's in Wiltshire, you know, up in the fields outside. It's a lovely place to go for a walk, and you'd have a roommate, and you would have a virus dripped up your nose, and they would see, like, you know, who, I mean, not everybody would get the virus, and some of them were coronavirus. So they did some studies. I think when I was there, it was a coronavirus trial, and you, in this, they would literally drip it up your nose, and then you'd sit around, and but the thing is, you got three lovely home-cooked meals a day, like shepherd's pie would arrive in one of those stackable, like, I don't know what they call them. There's a word for them.
In like England. The lunchbox, miner's lunchbox. Yeah,
exactly. Exactly. That would be left on your step. And when you went for a walk with someone, you had a string, you had to stay 30 feet apart. So it was like, so I was social distancing back in 1985 and thinking, this is hilarious. And little did I know that fast forward 40 years or whatever it is, I don't have the string, but I think that people, we should have a string. We should have this. I think people need a 6-foot string, and they need to hold it, because, you know, you got the creep.
Oh, you know, yeah, I mean? You have the creep. Yep.
The creep. I start out at 6, and then particularly if you're drinking, you know, you're socially, you're like, I think I'm close. I think I'm a little closer. I'm going to back off. Maybe not, you know, by the end of the night, you're like, so we need the string.
A kiddie pool with suspenders, right?
Yes, even better. Yeah, I know. So the common cold, you know, yeah, it just took me back. I mean, I love microbiology. I don't know a lot about it, but I love it. This was one of the studies they'd done at the Common Cold Unit, also relevant for COVID. They were trying to get at, is a virus more readily spread by fomites, that is, by touching a glass that someone else then picks their nose. Mm-hmm. So is it more readily spread that way or through the air, through droplets and aerosols? And the way they studied it is they had a card game. They had people for the fomites, they had people playing poker. So they're touching cards, they're all sharing. So they're sitting around a table. And then they, you know, the aerosols is just people in the room. And for that particular virus, the fomites were the better. And that, I remember in the beginning of COVID, people were obsessed with don't touch your face.
Yeah.
And now it's shifted completely to aerosols. And I wondered about, you know, that work back in the day with the, on transmission. They even did, someone else did this great study where they had a lecture theater and they were observing people on a panel and they were counting the number of times. Oh no, it was the people on the panel who were watching people in the audience and counting them times they picked their nose, touched their eye, or picked their nose. Mm-hmm. And picking, there's a tremendously high, surprisingly high unconscious nose pick rate. Like, you're not really thinking about it. You're just kind of like, you know.
Oh no, I really think I savor every second. I'm really glad the touching your face thing doesn't turn out to be important, because I am completely incapable of not touching my face.
No, same here. But the other thing about the touching your face that I never got, I mean, okay, don't touch your eye because it's a direct route into the nasal passages, and obviously sticking it up the nose, same thing. But how, if you touch your forehead, or I'm always like this, all right? How's the virus getting from here? It's not walking. They don't have legs. Is that just sort of keep out of the zone? I never understood that.
Well, yeah. I mean, I'll bet once it's here, its odds of getting to a mucous membrane have increased dramatically.
Yeah. Okay. It's a precautionary. Just, you know, stand back. It's the line at the immigration. When you come into it's like stand behind the line. Basically,
because you lie down on your pillow and then you just start to smear it all over, and then you're drooling, and then you've got a liquid path.
Oh, okay, right. The liquid path and the face smush. I overlooked
the Homer Simpson.
I overlooked both of those. Yeah, all right. Now I get it. Yeah. But anyway, so.
Have there been any movies or television that has that's helped get you through?
Yeah. Okay, this one, I keep mentioning it to people, and everybody's like, what? You're going to be like, what? But okay, it's called Beforeigners.
No.
Okay. See, well, there was the whoop.
Yeah. No. What is before?
Okay. It's Norwegian. All yeah. Right? So you got your subtitles. So you know. Okay. No, it's Norwegian. And any way I describe the premise, it's going to sound really dumb, but it's not. It's really good. So here's the premise. It's set in contemporary Oslo, right? Okay, mm-hmm. And it's a police department. There's people who work in the police department. Okay, what's going on is all of a sudden, some kind of weird portal has opened up in the water, off the bay, whatever the hell the bay is outside Oslo. I've never been there. But people from the Viking era, people from the Edwardian era, they're popping up. And they're just arriving, and it's done so well. This sounds dumb, right? It sounds terrible.
No, it sounds amazing.
Anyway, it's a murder story. This woman and the people who show up are called beforeigners, like as in before and foreigner. Oh, right. There's a lot of parallels to immigration, and I mean, there's these people showing up. There's a lot of hostility towards them, but they try to fit in. And like the ones who are really the old Norse, they're just like in the woods running around getting rabbits. And the people, the Edwardians are, you know, have brought in their own weird drugs. The Viking. Anyway, there's a woman, the police department hires as a publicity thing, a foreigner, and she's awesome. She's really tough. And she works with a regular Oslo guy, and they're trying to solve this murder. It's really good. I just did this whole 10-minute ad for foreigners, and I'm not even being paid anything by Netflix, or was it Netflix or HBO? Anyway.
It sounds like.
So good.
I tried to watch, oh my gosh, Norm, what is Ron Moore's Scottish time travel show?
Oh,
no, is it Joss Whedon or Ron Moore?
Ronald D. Moore, yes, where she goes to the past and there's, and oh my gosh, Outlander.
Outlander.
Oh, okay. I've heard of Outlander.
I tried to watch it. I watched 4 or 5 episodes and it became such a... It's a bodice ripper. I mean, it's a bodice ripper. That's what it is. And it's really good. It's just not my personal cup of tea.
There are no bodices ripped in this one. There are some people wearing strange things that may be ripped, but no bodices. There are no bodices. But
this sounds like a much more nitty gritty version of that. That sounds amazing.
It's actually really good. Okay, Queen's Gambit, I liked it, but I'm a huge fan of the Walter Tevis novel.
It's funny. And, just read it a couple of years ago.
Yeah, me too. Me too. For the first time. I don't know why. I just stumbled onto it. Loved that novel. So I had that weird disconnect of, you know, these outfits are they're really pretty. The whole set, you know, it kind of had a Mrs. Maisel makeover. And that was jarring for me because there's none of that in the novel. Fine. It's a visual, it's a series. I know why I understand why they want to do that, but, that kind of threw me, but I did, I did enjoy it, you know, and I would have enjoyed it had I not read the novel too, but, so that was good.
Yeah. I read the novel way back in the '80s because I was collecting books on pool and Walter Tevis wrote The Hustler and The Color of Money, obviously. And then I read that and I read the book about 4 years ago because Rian Johnson and I were talking about it and he was saying he'd read it and he thought it was a nearly impossible book to film. And then we ended up having this long discussion over dinner about ways to visualize chess. And I thought the show threaded that needle beautifully.
I did too, because the thing about the book that was extraordinary to me is I don't play chess. I know how, but only in that I know what the pieces do. You know, I would be beat by a child could beat me in 60 seconds. And there's a lot of chess in the book, a lot of discussion of different tactics and openings and maneuvers, but it never lost me. It was, that was done so well. And it was hard enough to do that. Kind of like the way the Martian was able to talk about the technology that he was going to use to survive. And even if you didn't quite understand it, he did it in a way that you didn't get bored. You didn't lose the thread. So Tevis did that so well. And then I thought the added dimension of visual presentation, how is that going to work? Because chess is an internal procedure. I thought they did a really good job of that with the ceiling, the thing on the ceiling. Yeah.
Yes. I listened to a podcast of one of the editor who she did the entire series, and she said the way she edited the chess scenes, was a conversation as if it was dialogue. So every move was a line of dialogue. And then just like they could condense a conversation as long as you get the salient points.
Oh, wow. Like,
then that's what got across emotionally for the viewer.
Yeah, that's yeah. And I loved the sound effects, the sounds of the clock when she'd, you know, they'd smack the clock and then move the pieces. Just the back and forth of that was enough to carry me through those scenes. I was really impressed with, they pulled off a TV show about chess.
I know. And you didn't have to know anything about chess to still find it riveting.
No. And you also, they inspired a whole new generation of kids to play chess. My granddaughter's 6, and we were going to get her a chess board because she's smart. She loves, you know, she's an analytical thinker. We could not find, we went to the toy store on Lakeshore. No chess games left. They completely sold out. Yeah.
It turned out to be beneficial that I'd read the book because I was watching it with Julia. And when the little girl is about to go downstairs into the janitor's area in the orphanage, my wife was like, I don't think I can watch this show. And I'm like, it's not going to turn out the way you think it's going to.
Don't be afraid. She's just going to play chess. Yeah.
Here's a really weird one I came across. The woman that plays her alcoholic mother in Queen's Gambit is, in fact, the director of Can You Ever Forgive Me?
And the Mr. Rogers.
Mr. Rogers. Oh, wow.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Oh, I love Can You. That's the one with Melissa McCarthy, right?
Yes.
And the fabulous Hugh Grant. Not Hugh Grant.
Richard E. Grant.
Thank you. Not Hugh Grant. I love Mary. Oh, Mary.
Oh, there are two Grants.
Marianne Heller, I want to say. She's a wonderful director.
Oh, okay. So, because she was, as an actress, really interesting to me because it was always a tension, because she's a little quirky and you're like, is she a good mother or a terrible mother? She's weird. Like, and I always think they're about to devolve into some horrible yelling match, but they had they're both strange, damaged people, but they meshed in this really interesting way. And I think that actress, however she decided to play that.
Yeah.
Created this lovely tension, not in a don't go down their way, but it's just like y'all's a little off kilter.
Well, I thought that was the single best thing the show did with the book was really make that relationship feel real and substantive. Mm-hmm. I was, because you finish the book and you're like, wow, the mom was an alcoholic and she taught her daughter how to be an alcoholic and a drug addict, and that was kind of the way she loved her.
Yeah.
And we all have our crosses to bear, and the show got you right to that same point.
Yeah. It was nuanced is that horrible word everybody uses about portrayals, but anyway, it was that word. It was really well. Yeah, it was interesting. It wasn't cliche. It wasn't predictable. Yeah. And it's the other thing that's amazing to me about that show and about my brain is how much of that I read the book 2 years ago, and I kept turning to Ed and going because he read the book too, going, hey, that wasn't in the book. I don't think that was in the book. He's like, you know what? I think it was. Like, I think it stuck fairly closely to the book. I just forgot.
Oh no, me
a lot of the book.
Mike Birbiglia has a joke in one of his recent specials where he says, "I've read hundreds and hundreds of books in my life, and I don't remember anything." Hey everyone, Adam here, and I just wanted to let you know that today's episode of the podcast is made possible by support from American Giant. Look, things are weird. And if I've taken one thing away from recent events, it's that the method by which I think we can start healing is by participating in and supporting our local communities. And personally, I'm always looking for brands that match my values: ethical, local, sustainable. American Giant is one of those brands. It might not be the least expensive, but their upfront cost is far outweighed by the durability and quality of the stuff they make. They make the best sweatshirt on the planet, and I just happened to be wearing one today, and I didn't know I was recording this. They have also built a 100% USA-based supply chain. I own over a dozen of their products, some for over half a decade, and the quality and comfort never ceases to amaze me. Also, as you can imagine, I am hard on my stuff, and theirs is as durable as it gets. Right now, you can get 15% off your first order when you use promo code ADAMS at American-Giant.com. That's 15% off when you use code ADAMS at American-Giant.com.
No, I know. I go back because I've started putting it on Goodreads, because sometimes people say, oh, what do you recommend? And when they say this, they go, what books have you read lately? And I go, I just like sit there like a grouper, like, so what I do now is I go, if you go on Goodreads, and I only put on 4 and 5 star, mostly 5 star. I just don't put it on, because I don't rate books. I don't want to rate. I will not give anybody a 1 or 2 star. So it's like, here's all the books I love. They're all go there because I can't think. I can't even name one. It's like 200 books on there.
You're doing a writer's version of what everyone in LA does, because no one in LA will say a movie is a piece of shit because they all know how hard it is to make a movie, and they forgive everybody because it's hard to make a movie.
Exactly. And you spend two years on a book. Well, some people spend 2 years on a book or more or less, whatever you spent. However it came out. He just a big chunk of you there, and then somebody comes and shits on it. You're like, oh, really? Did you need to do that? That wasn't.
And then
you're
asked to take out, to condense it into 1/4 the length, right?
That's right, exactly.
I remember a former movie critic telling me that he realized he had to stop writing movie reviews because he got off on actually dissing terrible movies. And he's like, I saw this part of my personality, and it was so clear. It was just awful. I didn't want to exercise that bone.
No, I do. I talked to her. There's a woman I won't name any names, but a woman who reviewed one of my books and who did it. It was a nice review, and I was thanking her. But in the conversation, she said, "No, but I really enjoy writing a nasty review." I was like, "Who? You do?" I can't. One time, I was assigned a book review, and it's for the New York Times, and they do need to run a mix of good and bad. Otherwise, what's the point of a book review section?
Yeah.
I have another answer to that, which is never mind. But anyway, so I got this book and I was like, ooh, it's not very, eek. So it's like, and I tried to get out of it. I said, you don't have a lot of pages in that book review. So I said, why don't we focus on a book that's more deserving of the treatment and the exposure, and let's just skip these. Like, no, Mary, you have to do this review. You have to do this. You've raved about every book I've given you. So I did this review. It was so painful for me. I pointed out a couple things about it. And then I would go, to be fair though, the reason he may have done this, I kind of like gave him an excuse. Right. And then it came out, and I was bracing for like a letter from the guy, and I got this thank you. Like, he couldn't tell that it was actually a bad review. And to my mind, it was a bad review, but he couldn't tell. So, yeah.
But you were being constructive. I mean, and that's what he saw.
Yeah, I was. It was exactly. It was constructive criticism. Yeah.
I was a little shocked. I'm going to just mention another writer. I was a little shocked when Susan Orlean came out recently and said she reads everything on a e-reader.
Does she?
Which I super admire that. Life would be a lot easier if I could do that. But then I also think life would be easier if I, like Magritte, just painted and I had a little canvas in the corner of my apartment and that's all I needed. But do you need the physical book, or are you fine with e-readers as well?
I've got to have the physical book. I can't, like, I just accepted a, I'm doing a book review for the Times. And what they've started doing now, I was going to say it's because the book review sections are shorter, but if they're online, there's no limit. But I guess, they are still putting out a paper book review section. So they tend to give you do 2 books in 1 1,200-word review, which is a lot of reading for one little, anyway. So, and they're trying, they're all going like, oh, well, it's COVID, so I'm not in the office. So how about a PDF? I'm like, I like to write, especially if I'm reviewing it. I want to write all over it. I want to underline stuff. I'm like, I'm really sorry. I'm going to be a pain in the ass. Can you send me? Can we FedEx? Here's my number, please. I can't. I don't. I want. Well, and as a reader, I just want the book. I know it's part of it is because I'm a little bit of a Luddite. But I also just the physical object. I like a hardback book even. I love
me too.
I love a hardback. I love the heft of it. I like flipping through it. I like the ones with the, what's it called on when there's a word.
Deckle
for it.
Edge.
Yes, thank you. I was going to say beveled edge, but that's the fireplace we were working on. The beveled, deckled. Yeah, I love the deckling. I wish I were the kind of writer that got deckling. I'm not, though. I'm not. You got to be literary.
No, yeah. You know what? What you need to do is you need to do, this is a great pitch. You need to do a first edition callback time travel edition of like six of your books all done in like the old cloth covers.
Yes.
With like the endless forwards, one after the other, XI, XI, you know, all the fake page numbering that happens before page one.
Totally. I would love that. No, I want a boxed set. I want them to do a boxed set, like really gorgeous kind of box. Yeah, I've suggested it. Never happens.
I want to help design the case for the box set because I feel. Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, I'll tell them that you're going to be on the hook.
I'm in.
Okay, good. I don't even get the little fussy thing at the end that goes about the typeface. Like, I want to know, like, how did that come up? We're like, I think we need a whole separate page about the typeface. I think people really want to know about the origins of this typeface. I love that it exists.
I love that page.
I do too. It's just this weird throwback. Somebody in the publishing world said, yes, we're going to do a whole page dedicated to the typeface. I mean, I love it.
When we were working on, when Simon and Schuster and I were working on my book, and they said, do you have ideas about fonts? And I'm like, oh, do I? And I told them my two favorite fonts. And I said, so if you did the cover in sans serif and a serif font, let's do Futura, medium bold, and Caslon. Those are my two favorite sans serif and serif font. And so they did it. And I got the cover treatment from them, and I was like, the kerning on this lettering is really weird. Could you send me the Photoshop file so I could check out the layer? And they're like, oh, no, we don't share. We only share PDFs. So I took their PDF into my Photoshop, overlaid the – and they had gotten Caslon right, but they had swapped Futura for some bullshit
bastards
alternative. And I was like, you bastards. Exactly.
But here's a movie director and a movie poster, like,
well, here's the rub. I don't think I have a copy of it right near me, but if you take the book jacket off my book, on the spine is still that old font, and I can't abide it. I can't bear to look at it.
Oh my god. I just talked to you know, the podcast Sawbones?
No.
It's a popular podcast that has to do with medicine. I forget their names now. Shit, that's bad. I should say their names. Anyway, Sawbones. But they did. It's popular enough that they did a book based on Sawbones. Awesome. It's medical history, basically. And there's two people do it, and they're funny. And one is an MD and one isn't. I think they're a couple. But the book, beautiful hardcover book, but they left in the dummy index. So the index, and get this, the index is for some weird fringe deep dive into knives. So it's like, you know, there's like weird names of military knives, there's polishing stones, and it's like an entire 6-page index about knives, and then what the publisher did is said, well, we can't redo the book, so we're going to glue together the pages of the index so people won't see them.
Oh my god, so what a solution.
Yeah, how did they even think of that? But they took so long to glue the pages together that the book wasn't available at the time they were publicizing it. One thing led to it. It was just a horrible, anyway, so the paperback's coming out, and I'm like, good, it has another chance. The index is now correct. But anyway, holy, can you imagine?
No, I mean, I used to work in graphic design where when we put an image on a layout, we'd write in Sharpie on it, FPO, for position only, so the printer would know to swap it out. And the number of times I'd open up a catalog and see FPO over a photo. That happened all the time back before computers.
Oh, yeah. No, I can't even. But it's a very interesting index. I kind of lost myself in the knives index. I was like, wow, this is a world. This is a complicated world. I mean, my next book is going to be Stick.
Shiv.
It was a house ad for their other book they were publishing.
I love the idea of someone who specializes in reading indices.
I go straight for the index. I mean, if it's a research type of project, I don't even think about reading the whole book. It's just straight to the index. And people who do indexes, indexers, I guess they're called. Yeah. Indexers. Yeah, that's
I found myself wondering, because they did one for my book and I didn't even ask them. Do you guys just run a computer program for common words and then
word cloud, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Or should I tell you some words that should be in the index? I think I did suggest a few.
Yeah, I don't have indexes and indices. Sorry, it's indices, isn't it? I don't have indices. I feel like it has to be said in a British accent. I have no indices. I lack the index. I don't have an index in my book. And I feel like, I mean, each book I get a couple of emails from people saying, I really wanted to go, fuck you. You don't have an index. I hate you. You waste my time. I guess because my books aren't thought of as, that's not a definitive treatment of a topic. And I mean, who's going to go to it and say, let's see if Mary Roach covered, I don't know, the Lashley gland or something, whatever.
Actually, I disagree. I think that would be a perfect, I mean, going to places like you who have compiled a whole bunch of different fields to talk about a central subject, I think that's a perfect place to start your research and figure out where to go looking for the right papers.
I should have an index, you're right.
You totally should have an index. Can I call your publisher and complain?
Call them up. You know what? I'd have to pay for it, but that's okay. I would. But they're funny. Publishers are funny. They're like, you must pay for your author photo and photo permissions. It's like, really? Okay.
Yeah, I was surprised.
It's a funny little quirk.
For my book tour, Simon & Schuster actually made me a little Amex card for expenses.
Wow, cool.
And I never freaking used it. I mean, I billed them, but I got this and totally forgot I had somebody else's credit card to spend with in my wallet.
You idiot.
I know.
I want one of those.
I could have gotten a massage on the publisher.
Totally. Yeah. Because you can't really tell. The name, massage parlors and restaurants. Who can tell, right? that's a pizzeria. No. Yeah. Happy endings. That's a dessert parlor.
Is there something that you are super craving to go back to once we are potentially somewhat back to normal?
Yeah. First I need another book idea. But once I have one, going out there into the world, into other people's worlds, the thing that I do and I love to do. You know, I was just looking I have to do a podcast that has to do with Gulp later, somebody else's podcast. And I was reading the chapter in the Netherlands at Food Valley, the oral processing lab. And I was like, God, I miss being in a lab where people study chewing using comfort putty. This like looks like a silicone, looks like a pencil eraser, and you chew it. And I was like, these little universes that I get to visit, I haven't been there in a year, and I'm like I'm kind of a hollowed out husk of myself now. Yeah. I'm like, I miss that. When will I come back?
Yeah, me too. We drove cross country, my wife and I, in late September, early October for about 2.5 weeks. And that sustained us for a couple of months. It was really, really nice to have such a break in the routine.
What route did you take?
Well, we actually took separate routes. I drove from here to Nashville, basically taking, I didn't know that you could take Route 80 for like 1,700 miles.
80 goes all the way across.
Yeah, right? Well, I took it all the way to Wisconsin and then down to Salt Lake, Denver, and then across Kansas. Wow, that was, Kansas was a little bit flat.
Wow, yeah. I originally came out west on 80.
Oh, really?
When I moved out, it was a drive-away car, some poor schmo.
Oh, wow, right.
Yeah. trusted myself and two other recent college graduates with his old Cutlass Supreme.
That's a nice road trip car.
It is. It was great. It was great. Less great by the time I got there.
I ended up in Salt Lake City with a goal to get to Nashville. And so I was like, all right, let's look up. What is the road trip from Salt Lake City to Nashville? And like at least two different blogs devoted an entire article to the fact that the drive from Salt Lake City to Nashville is the worst road trip in the U.S. That is super, super boring.
Oh, well. Yeah. At least you get to go through the salt flats, right? I love this. Right?
Yes, above Salt Lake. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Love the salt flats. That was the highlight for me. I don't remember a lot about that trip. I was 21. but the salt flats are just amazing. Yeah. So yeah, road trip. Yeah. Ed and I were going to drive down to see his mom. But it was just do we stay in hotels? We didn't want to do the, back then people were quarantining for 2 weeks.
Right.
Before they would see anyone. We're like 2 weeks in South Florida.
Maybe not.
Yeah. So we didn't do it, but we were thinking about it. Did you have a camper or did you stay in motels?
We stayed in hotels. And it felt really pretty safe. Every hotel I was at was at like 10% capacity.
Yeah.
The hotel staffs were all so pleased to see people. Had the best customer service I've ever had, bar none.
Yeah.
Everywhere.
Yeah. I think we could have done it. Yeah. That way. Yeah. Cool.
And it was, I miss travel. I flew 100,000 miles a year every year for the last 20 years.
I there were years when I was on the road for probably 4 months reporting.
Oh my God.
Back in the, not so much these days. I think it was back in my 20s and 30s when I had less of a home life to come back to. I think about the relationship I was in. It's like, there's kind of a reason maybe I was always on the road. And I'm not quite so eager to get home, I guess. I miss it. It doesn't have to be exotic. I mean, I'm not looking at, I mean, beaches and loveliness is great, but kind of boring compared for me to being in somebody's lab.
Oh, no, I remember you saying that one of your favorite things to do is to look out the window of a plane and go, what is that? Oh, my God, I want to go there.
Yes. Just fly. Yeah, exactly. The more desolate and weird, the better. Like flying. I remember flying over the Arctic, just like there's just nothing there. Just like weird lakes and shit. And I would that's the kind of place. Someone ended up doing the show you and I talked about.
Did they really?
It's like What on Earth. It's called What on Earth. And they start up above and they're like, they see stuff. I mean, it's a different, slightly different. Yeah. I think it's a Science Channel, right? Yeah.
Oh,
And then they go and look at it. But they didn't do it as well as you and I. Maybe they did. Maybe they did it better.
I'm going to go take a look.
They did it differently.
I'm pretty sure I pitched that idea to them at some point. Maybe it was a soft pitch.
Oh, well, they went ahead and did it. Some version
television.
Of it. Television, yeah. But I want to go to those weird, obscure corners. I mean, there are a lot left out there to go to.
And you've been to Antarctica like more than a few times, right?
Yeah, I've been 4 or 5 times. Yeah, wow. I know. I love that place. And it used to be the government would pay for it. It was the most amazing thing in the world. The polar programs and National Science Foundation has the polar programs, and they had a press trip budget where they would in the beginning it was kind of like a junket where they send a group of people down and.
Yeah.
It's almost like a tour around and you've got a little time with the researchers that you needed. But in the later years, they're like, do you need to go out to where they're searching for meteorites in the middle of nowhere in a tent camp? I'm like, yes, I do. I need to go there. I desperately need to go there for this story. And it was just amazing. Or you could go out like the Dry Valleys. I need to go to the Dry Valleys. And you'd get the helicopter or the Twin Otter that would take you there. And drop you off, and you'd stay for a few days and report your story. It was so great. It was amazing. Oh. Or sometimes it was on one of the research vests. Then Nathaniel Palmer, I was out for 2 weeks when they were doing mud coring.
Yeah.
Absolutely amazing.
Oh, yeah. I'm so jealous. Has COVID reached Antarctica, or is it the one continent that hasn't?
COVID has reached Antarctica. I think it's maybe the Chilean base.
Oh, man.
Maybe. The Chilean base is the only base, I believe, that had family, has family members there.
Ah, I see.
So, yeah, it's there. It's even there. Can you believe it? I know.
Humans, man. We can't be trusted with anything.
Adam, you haven't been to Antarctica?
I haven't, and it's a life goal. A few years ago, Norm and Joey got to go on an Arctic icebreaker trip for, what was that, 3 weeks?
Yes, I remember.
2 weeks.
Yeah.
Yeah, 2 weeks. Yeah, yeah.
Amazing. I love the Arctic, too. Yeah. Fantastic.
It's a lifelong dream of mine.
Yeah. Adam, I thought of you today. Well, I thought obviously thought of you today, because how could I not, how could I do your podcast and not think about you? That'd be really weird. But no, actually yesterday it started. It was a tweet. It was a Twitter thread based on the could an astronaut propel herself or himself across the flight deck using Flatus? And somebody, bless their heart, actually did a bunch of calculations and said, even if you weren't eating a Chipotle something or other burrito, it would be a challenge. And then someone else came in and said, what about the urine stream? Would the urine stream do it? And they calculated, like,
that's a good question.
If you're pissing really hard, would that do it? And then, and so, you know, it was just, I thought about, yeah, because that's how we met.
Yes.
That's how we met. I wrote to you. I emailed you out of the blue.
We, saying, Jamie and I took you out to lunch at Serpentine. Here on, around the corner from the cave, and you, you told us that, and we ended up pitching it to Chris Hadfield, when he was on the ISS, and he said, "Yes, I totally want to do it." And NASA was like, "Nobody can do it. Everyone, stop talking about it."
Yeah, exactly. But Roger Crouch, the astronaut who told me, he had tried it. He tried it, but he, and it didn't work. Obviously, he's like, The lungs hold a lot more air than the rectum. You can blow. The average person can blow harder than they can fart. So why are we even thinking about farts? I'm like, because it's more fun.
It's true.
It's more fun. Anyway, he said he thought maybe that he, since he was wearing his chinos as they wear, they've got to change the outfit for astronauts. The chinos. Anyway, he felt that the fabric of the pants, it might have interfered with the thrust. Somehow you'd need to be naked, and NASA was not excited about that, especially as it was a mixed gender mission.
Well, now, given that we've been able to bracket this podcast by talking
about poop
and
that.
Its artifacts, Mary, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. It's been a real breath of fresh air to see you in the new year.
Oh, God, likewise. Always, always, always a treat. Great to see you and great to meet you, Norm.
And I hope we get to dine soon when we're back to normal. It'd be great to see you. Please give Ed my regards.
Oh, likewise. Give my regards to Julia, and wonderful to see you. And thank you so much for having me on. It's so much fun.
My pleasure. And we're going to have you on to talk about the book when that's coming.
Okay. So just, and your personal footnote.
Excellent. Oh, yeah. No, I'm totally into it.
The lengthy footnote. All right. Excellent.
Thanks, Mary. Bye.